Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 378 of the Roguecast, recorded June 21st, 2022. Call me Lady.
All right, we come to you, as always, from the what do we call it? Is this the bunker, or is this the...
Please, let's not be preppers. let's not do that. We come to you on the day of the summer solstice.
Well, summer solstice.
Or was that yesterday?
No, it is today. Happy solstice, everyone.
Yeah.
In case you didn't
notice, summer has just now arrived.
I hate to be the buzzkill, but tomorrow will not be the solstice when they hear this.
You know what? They can use their imagination.
Land of imagination.
I mean, they should already be picturing that I'm riding around the office here in a stallion in full plate mail.
Is that what you do on a summer solstice?
You're looking at me, right? That's right.
I was told to dress up like somebody from Midsommar. Is that okay?
Yes, we need you to dress up as old man who leaps off and badly breaks his leg on a cliff.
Man, I didn't want to be the guy who dies.
Sorry, that's who it is.
Can I just have all the flowers?
It's that or Burning Bear Man.
So for those who haven't seen Midsommar, y'all speaking nonsense.
Burning Bear Man and Man Who Leaps Off a Cliff.
Okay, yeah.
Those are my choices. Sure.
That's it.
Sorry. These choices. These are sad.
All right, well, if there's anybody else in that movie, I don't know them. You could be dead parents in the garage.
Anyway, happy solstice as of yesterday, as you hear this.
They're in a bedroom, I will have you know.
Whatever, it's been a little bit since I've seen it.
Yes, it is summer, which of course means here in Texas it's over 100 degrees every day.
Yes.
Everyone hates me for enjoying summer.
Yes.
And you might be right to hate me.
Even you can't be enjoying
it. It's a bit
this.
Much. I'm going to have to go door-to-door apologizing for liking this weather. I know.
And I believe Randy is not so much, I love going outside and just wallowing in this heat. I believe Randy is like, I love being air-conditioned in my car or in the house in this heat.
But then we get scolded by Facebook things by saying PEC needs, you need to keep your AC at 82 at night.
That's bullshit.
Yeah. No, screw that.
The best feelings in the world are these two feelings. One, to leave the air conditioning, the slightly chilly air conditioning, and walk out into the heat is a great feeling. And then to leave the heat and walk into the air conditioning. The only way you can have those two feelings is if it's hot outside.
One of those things is true.
No, both those things are true. They're great.
I don't know if I've ever...
The change is fantastic.
I don't think I've ever been happy about walking from air conditioning into
the heat. Oh, I love that. I love that bit of...
I didn't know that this was part of Randy's enjoyment of it. I'm learning something about you. I'll add this to the FBI profile.
So you like pain.
No, it's good.
I don't completely disagree with Randy. I am an equal opportunity weather enjoyer, and so I like elements of the heat. I will probably go out for a walk today in this scalding heat, probably around sunset when it's chilling out a little bit. There's a part of me that enjoys it. My ideal is fall weather, but I can work with both colder and warm weather. I actually think I somewhat prefer the warm weather because really cold weather is pretty unpleasant.
Right, where cold weather often comes with like snow and sleet and all that stuff. That's terrible.
No, that stuff's cool.
That's cool.
All right, they didn't tune in to hear us talk about the weather. Let's move on.
We're not recording the weather podcast? Wait, what podcast is this?
Rogues Gallery, Comics, Games, and Weather. That's what we are.
I record a lot of podcasts. Dave, you're doing a bunch of podcasts. I do a bunch of podcasts.
I only do a singular podcast.
Nick just does one podcast.
You got to work on that, Nick. You should be doing an action figure podcast, obviously.
Yes.
all right. Like, I don't have time. I'm making action figures.
That's true.
Reminder that we have our new owlbear coins. People are starting to catch on to these.
Yeah. Somebody came into the store yesterday, and so he's like, so y'all are printing your own form of currency now.
Yes.
And I was like, yes.
I give people the option. Somebody comes in for a gift certificate, and I'm like, well, I have these interesting paper ones that I could do for any domination, or I have these badass silver coins.
Yep.
And they're like, silver coins.
Yeah, yeah. We have more dice bags on order, the cheaper ones, so you can get that and get a bag. And yeah, basically $10 coins.
They have the Rogues Gallery logo on it and an owlbear picture.
Yep.
And a little $10 thing on the back. And you can get them in place of a gift certificate if you want to feel like you're giving dwarven treasure coins.
Indeed.
Which, why wouldn't you want to do that?
I can't imagine.
Just take the plunge.
There is no reason why you shouldn't do that.
We got a couple things in from gaming. We've finally got the Unmatched Redemption Row, which is the second Marvel Unmatched. Has
play as Moon Knight and kick ass.
Ghost Rider, Moon Knight, and Luke Cage. And looks very cool.
I'm still a little weirded out that they chose the Thunderbolts version of Luke Cage.
It is a little weird, but it's a very catchy looking
one. It is.
What's the Thunderbolts version of Luke
Cage?
He's
got like the gauntlets and kind of like
a little more powered looking.
Yeah, a little more powered looking instead of like street
And I think that's why.
Well, he is called Power Man.
It's true.
We got a cool-looking magic land station. Mm-hmm. Not the actual land itself, because most magic players have funny land. But he, like, it's got five different colors.
There's little holding receptacles that are themselves all, like, held in, like, a little sort of thing that holds, what, five of them? Five different colors, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool. We got the aspect of Tiamat, which is the slightly smaller pre-painted Tiamat.
The ones your players could, the one your players could actually beat.
Yeah, it's about as big as a giant dragon instead of the enormous. We just love the unpainted enormous Tiamat as well. So, yes.
if you're running a game right, players should be able to beat Tiamat.
That's true. We got three new figurines of Adorable Power. These are little figures you can put on your desk.
Yeah, almost like, they're, if you want to think of them as like Funko D&D monsters, that's what they look like.
They're a silver dragon.
There's a displacer beast, which is like a little kitty.
That's the best.
I haven't actually looked at them yet.
And there's a mind flayer.
The mind flayer's cool. The displacer beast is the
beast is pretty good, yeah. We got a cool-looking D&D premium campaign journal from Ultra Pro. Did you guys see this?
Yeah.
Very cool-looking thing.
Yep.
Just one of those things to keep track of, like, you know, your main NPCs
and
key locations and all that stuff.
You build up a little grail diary for your D&D campaign.
I mean, that's pretty cool. What DM doesn't create an endless wealth of detail that the players will never see?
This way they see your...
Look at the diary! Look at it!
I like that it's just filled with, like, blank post-it notes that are sticking to the ends. It's just like, haha, look what I did.
This section is titled Victims. What does that mean?
Don't worry about that.
Strategically open up to a thing.
Looks like a recipe for homemade lime. Is that... That's for drinks?
Don't worry about that either. We got the expansion for Star Wars Outer Rim called Unfinished Business. For those who don't know, Outer Rim is sort of their Firefly. You're on the Outer Rim of the Galaxy. You're playing like a rogue trader kind of thing and going around making your deals.
It's a Star Wars board game where you outfit your team, like smugglers or traders and things like that, and you get cool crew members and droids and all that stuff and have adventures.
Why couldn't they call it Unfinished Business? Al Capone-ish.
This one has new characters, ships, gear, bounties, all dice, all the other stuff. I forget what all the characters are, but I remember there's some cool looking ones, like Chewbacca's one of them. But also, I want to think, like, Hondo might be in there.
Oh, interesting.
Hera Syndulla is in there.
Oh, very cool.
So, yeah, very cool. And then we got a game called Bar Fight that I kickstarted for us a little while back. This is a card game in which you're making cocktails at, like, a cocktail-making competition for local bars.
Okay.
Yeah, seems like a fun...
That's not a fight.
If you want to learn how to mix drinks.
I was going to say, I thought there was going to be, like, a bar fist fight.
No, yeah, Randy, you really let me down on this one. People should definitely not get this game.
All right, well, that wraps up my...
A mixology game sounds like a fun separate game.
Does.
I just wasn't prepared for it. I wasn't mentally prepared yet.
I see.
Now that I'm coming around to it, because I've actually, like, over the weekend, I felt like I had, like, about five cocktails. And I'm ready for more Lush.
This is Lush weekend.
Yes.
Mr. Fancy.
And so, yeah, I just need more of that. You just came back from Hawaii. That was probably all you drank the whole time.
I had coffee. A lot of coffee.
Did it come in a coconut?
No, but I did have a
Do you think I didn't notice the pause before you said I had coffee?
I did have a pina colada in a pineapple.
Well, that sounds cool. Great.
All right, yeah.
That was cool.
I like it right now.
All drinks should come in pineapples and coconuts.
Sure. Absolutely.
Or coconuts, not both. You don't need a turducken kind of thing.
I mean, you could do it. It's true. I mean, kite, maybe. I don't know.
Let's move on to the news. Marvel recently lost the rights to Conan.
They didn't have it. Well, wait. They did have that for a decent length of time. Five years, something like
maybe.
That.
Maybe. It was during the pandemic, I
think we looked it up and it was like 3 years.
It's fairly short.
Because they had enough time that they did reprint some of the Dark Horse ones, but there was like two or three Conan books. There was like a miniseries. There was Savage Avengers. And not just one miniseries. Actually, there was a bunch of miniseries.
Yep.
Regular Conan ones, Belit, some Red Sonja stuff.
Yep.
Or is
no,
that...
Not
no,
Red
that's,
Sonja. Not Red Sonja.
They had Belit and they did somebody else, though.
Valeria.
Yeah.
Sure, those guys are both public domain, so.
Yeah, no, they did a Valeria thing, because there was like a Valeria team-up book.
That's a current book from somebody besides Marvel.
Is it?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes, that's not Marvel.
Okay. Anyway, but they've definitely done a number of miniseries and stuff, too. But overall, a shorter run on a license for Marvel.
Yeah. But they have announced that Titan has gotten the rights. Titan, the people who have Cowboy Bebop and Doctor Who.
Blade Runner.
Yeah,
they are a UK publisher, I think.
Yeah.
It's kind of an odd call. I don't think, what do you call it? Robert E. Howard was a Texan. The UK people don't understand anything about our hard living in the West Texas Plains.
It's true.
Which were like the inspiration for like Hyperborea and stuff like that. Like, weirdly enough, Texas has more of an imprint on Conan than you'd think. We also don't know like why they would leave Marvel, which presumably like can, broadly speaking, they seem to have like a maybe higher degree of craft on their books and stuff like that than what you're going to get at Titan. Not that I haven't enjoyed some Titan comics lately. Blade Runner is exceptionally good, but it seems weird to walk away from Marvel unless maybe Titan's like we can have boobies in ours or we will. Pay you more? I don't know how they can... That can't possibly be. They're small.
Marvel got the license in 2019.
Okay. That's just a little bit before pandemic-y times.
So, but Marvel does have a new license to replace it, and that license is Planet of the Apes.
Oh, right. So
which
weird.
Previously had been Boom's?
Yes, Boom did that, yep.
By the way, they just before we talk about Planet of the Apes... Conan crossed over with the Marvel Universe while they had the license. They did the Savage Avengers was the big thing. They have yet to do any Aliens stuff, or they've got Warhammer 2 right now and have not done any crossovers with that. I don't know particularly if they're planning on it, but I'd like to, actually.
I love the new Secret Wars.
Actually, I don't know if Warhammer would be a good idea.
Nope.
If you poke at that at all, then there's just like, it's so fascist-y.
What if the next Secret Wars has a Warhammer, Alien, Predator, Witchblade, Mindhunter?
sure, I'd Worlds. Probably like it better than the previous one.
Jonathan Hickman shakes his hand at you.
He's doing fine. Planet of the Apes. Do we yet know whether...
We don't know anything about it.
Okay.
We just know they're doing a Planet of the Apes comic.
Betting that they're probably going to lean into the original Planet of the Apes, but they may do their own rethink of it. They may spin off of the... They may spin off the recent trilogy.
Probably not going to spin off of the...
Tim Burton one?
Tim Burton movie.
No.
Let me tell you. I would read... Because that had cool visuals, and it just had a sucky writing in it, I would read a story set in the Tim Burton Apeverse.
Also, it did end on a cliffhanger, so they could do the comic book sequel to it.
Yeah. And Paul Giamatti, the wacky slave trader guy, was watchable in his way.
Watchable in his way. Tim Roth played like the villain.
I think so. And Helena Bonham Carter was the cute kissable ape.
She was Lady Ape. Kissable ape.
Call me Lady Ape.
I assume they will do like a Dr. Zaius backstory book.
Maybe so. But they should really focus on is Cornelius. Cornelius is the good ape. Dr. Zaius is an evil scientist who's like sold out to, I don't know, their own fascist-y kind of...
Dave, people like evil.
I guess. I mean, his name is well known. But Cornelius, who was voiced by Roddy McDowall, one of the greats. He fought vampires. He saved us when we needed it in Fright Night.
Yeah.
He needs to get the spotlight, but you could you could focus on any of those. And his wife Zira, I think. Any of those people? There's a big tapestry of five movies that from the original one that all connected up pretty well. They connected up comic book style. That is to say, there's some discrepancies, but the big picture sort of works. Anyway, I have some fondness for it. I didn't grow up with Planet of the Apes or even just reruns, essentially, of it, just in, like, on Saturday afternoons. I watched it when the Burton movie came out. They did a nice packaging of the original movies.
Yeah.
And that's when I finally saw them, and I liked them. They're pretty cool. So, I wish Marvel well, and I still want to see a crossover. I need Spider-Man to go there, whoever.
Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, the Guardians of the Galaxy. That'd be a good one.
Sure.
Sci-fi people.
Guy Ritchie has been announced to direct the live-action Hercules for Disney. I think this is a good thing because he did Aladdin, which I really liked.
Live action Hercules. You're not talking about Marvel's Hercules.
Nope. Live action Hercules for Disney.
Right. Okay. Whenever I see this come up, and I'm in a film group or two on Facebook, everybody like, there's a big audible groan in the room as people are like, Disney, stop remaking your movies.
Yep.
And, I can't help but find it's a little bit of wasted anguish, I think. Yeah. They're not as poorly done as you are making them out to be.
Yep.
And they even, like, some of them are pretty original. Arguably, stuff like Maleficent, like, mm-hmm. basically goes off completely in its own direction. Jungle Book was a good rethink. And the other ones have tended to be at least fun. But also, I kind of eased back on, you know, gnashing my teeth over some of that stuff when, the professor of medieval literature guy, the Tolkien professor who does a podcast I listen to, mm-hmm. talked about how, like, he was talking about, like, Arthurian lore and just how it, like, has changed over the years. And he said, basically, he's like, humans retell their favorite stories. It's one of those things we do.
Yeah.
There's a million different legends of Robin Hood, a million different legends of King Arthur, Sinbad, Greek heroes and all that stuff. So, you know, don't panic if Disney tells Hercules twice.
Yeah.
It's actually the only latest in a long line of thousands of Hercules stories.
Also, what is Hercules, 30 years old? I mean, that movie's been around for a while.
Yeah. I mean, I do agree. Disney is a big money-making machine. It'd be nice to have more creativity out there. I'd like to them to stop some of the endless sequels to Predators and stuff movies after the cool Comanche ones. because I liked Aladdin, if nothing else, I thought that was pretty good and unsung little bit. Yeah. People should check it out.
I never singing. It was a musical.
It starred the slappinest Will Smith ever before he was a big slapper man.
Yep.
That was back when he was like the most beloved family man.
He was. Not anymore.
Not anymore.
A little less beloved.
A little less beloved.
I think people still like him.
They'll have to do a little to win him back.
There is... There's a Jon Snow prequel being developed in HBO for Game of Thrones.
That definitely happening? I thought it was like
a prequel. We don't know if it's a prequel.
It's not a prequel. It's Kit Harington. Right. I think it's a sequel. It's going to be like him off in the
North.
Did
his ass get sent to the wall again?
Yeah.
But the wall is wrecked.
Yes.
Yeah, but he's out in the North with wildlings.
Okay. You don't have a wildling girlfriend presently, right?
No, she did.
And he killed his other girlfriend.
Yeah.
By the way, I just want a quick flashback to that moment when she shot him like with three arrows in that one season. That was hardcore. I was like, oh my god.
His actual wife shot him?
Yeah.
That was an intense scene. For all that the final season of Game of Thrones had disappointing elements in it throughout, I think, I can kind of accept the way things played out, and I thought his ending was okay. For him, that's a good ending. He did not want to rule this thing. He wanted to live a life.
But they talked about, like, the wildlings are still out there, so they could do, like, a bunch of new characters and all that kind of thing.
Right, the wildlings associate with giants. He has a history with them.
Jon Snow is wacky giant buddy. It's a workplace cop.
They high-five and it freeze frames.
Right? What?
Tormund survived, right?
He survived.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, get him back. He's
I don't remember him dying anyway, so I'm going to say
the Awesome Adventures of Tormund, Jon Snow, and Ghost.
Yeah, and one giant.
The thing about this, I think, I'm fine with it. I'm fine with any Game of Thrones
thing. Probably nobody is like, man, I need more of that Game of Thrones.
Well, House of the Dragon starts in, like, 2 months?
Yeah, yeah.
Very soon.
That's old school Targaryen history, right?
It is.
I need to see any of these. Like, it's... Because, you know, before Game of Thrones came out, if you just said HBO is producing a fantasy series based on a popular fantasy novel series, I would have probably been like, okay. It's probably going to stink like most fantasy adaptations stink, or just be schlocky. And then it turned out to be, like, for much of its run, very good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like this is the death knell in the actual novels.
Oh, for sure. He's never writing those novels.
Because I know Martin is heavily involved with House of the Dragon, and he's also reportedly involved with the Jon Snow
was
thing.
Was never going to finish those books. He had no idea how to do it.
Or was he going to finish them? Because he's finished other books before. He's got, like, many books in his under his name. Did he get so sidetracked? Is it an age thing combined with, like, becoming a Hollywood?
I wonder if it's a little bit he did, like, this was going to be the end, sort of the books that was told in the show, and people reacted so poorly, he was like, oh, fuck.
I feel like almost, I mean, just because he's got this open space where he could change things, that he almost has to be able to pull off something better. But, yeah, like, if it was too close, if it was kind of close to it, he might have been like, I'm just going to go
and look at this TV show that they're offering
direct
me.
Some more stuff, make some more money, and watch the pretty naked ladies on the sets.
Yeah.
I'm kind of okay with it. I didn't read past the fourth book.
I mean, I feel like we probably, if nothing else, it did seem like that ship sailed.
Yeah.
He's not going to finish these ships sailed.
Yep.
If he does, well, we can reassess it then in the year 2031 when he's on his deathbed finishing the first of three remaining books.
But soon we'll get a spinoff show of Arya and wherever she ended up.
See, now that I want to see. I'm way more interested in Arya. Mentioned,
but you say that, but that's not an actual thing.
No,
right?
That's not an actual thing.
But it should be.
It should be.
Like, Arya, I want to see Arya. I want to see what happened with her.
Yeah.
Arya Grande?
Arya Grande. You know what we don't need is a story of Bran the Blind King.
Well, he left. I don't know which.
Yeah.
He's always willing to go.
That at least is also not planned.
Yes.
And hopefully won't be planned.
Yeah. Some weird endings, man. Some weird endings.
Honestly, it could be one of those chances to redeem the character and let him be more than a seer. Seers are hard to make interesting.
Yeah.
They're all, like, otherworldly. It's like a shaman, like, kind of thing. It's like, nobody can relate to this character.
I want a prankster seer who tells you bullshit.
Or when it's revealed that Jaime and Cersei survived the collapsing of the, wherever they were.
Not only did we survive, we have conceived a child in the rubble.
And the child is immune to being crushed. We've raised him he's age 10 now. We've raised him for 10 long years under these crushing boulders, and he is immune to crushing powers, which means that he can defeat the zombie mountain.
Unfortunately, incest made him a mutant baby.
So he has laser eyes too. I'm going to stop you guys right there. We're not going to take this pitch. What else you got? How about a show about the Confederacy and where it won? Okay, you guys are done. Get out.
I don't know. Do people remember that the guys who made Game of Thrones were going to do a show about where the Confederacy had won Civil War?
Civil War.
What have the guys who've made Game of Thrones done since?
Nothing. Nothing.
You know why? Because
I can understand them taking a nap. It was a long road.
It's been a long nap.
But that's been like 3 years, right?
Yeah. What are their names? You know,
David Benioff and something.
Here's the thing. Like, Nick, it sounds like you want to get them. But, like, I want these guys to do good. They clearly have quality in them. They faced backlash like probably rarely has really been seen. They're somewhat probably persona non grata, but also probably not too difficult for them to make a comeback.
So, David Benioff is married to Amanda Peet, so first of all, he's already won. Second of all, he produced The Chair, which I think you liked, Nick. Wasn't that the... No, not The Chair. I was thinking of the doorstop. What's the thing where the guy fell down where the woman fell down the stairs, but she was actually murdered?
Oh. The Staircase.
The Staircase.
Okay.
I was thinking of another part of the house. The Chair was the thing with... that Netflix did.
Yes.
It was actually good.
Yeah, that was the Sandra Oh
thing. I forgot about that. So they've done some stuff.
Yeah, apparently they have like a Netflix
deal
with to make stuff.
Yeah, so okay, all right.
I mean,
but like I said, my big thing ultimately on all of these is I need to just see an episode to judge it.
Yeah,
Is this a franchise that is just going to become mediocre, or is this a franchise that could go back to hit some of those original heights?
I have a feeling that the new Game of Thrones. I didn't even watch the trailer.
Well, like, the trailer doesn't look amazing, but I don't know that if I had watched a trailer for the original Game of Thrones, I'm sure I did. I don't think it would have, other than saying, like, oh, they've got a budget. I think it would have, like, blown me away. I need to see, like, some characters talking. Like, you needed to see Tyrion doing his thing. You needed to see a lot of stuff in that first episode.
I remember the trailer being really good, because I had to convince...
House of the Dragon?
No, the original Game of Thrones.
Oh, I don't remember.
Because I remember, getting HBO specifically for that.
Okay. I mean, yeah. They also were hyping at, like, few other things. But, hopefully, House of the Dragon, is that anytime soon?
That's a couple weeks now.
Okay.
Yeah. And it starts like Matt Smith, right?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am too.
I mean, Game of Thrones could definitely become a friend. I mean, Star Wars certainly came back from the prequels.
By the way, some people don't like Jon Snow. He's one of those leading character guys that, you know... Buffy, Cyclops, any of those kind of dudes who are like Luke Skywalker, they kind of consider them the boring, you know, normal, nice people or whatever.
Yeah.
But I like Jon Snow. He was largely defined by indecision, you know, just trying to like make his way. He was a guy who wanted to be left alone.
I like Kid Harrison.
It would be interesting to see him have this opportunity to do what he wants, maybe for the first time in his life.
Yeah.
And he's definitely a strong and driven guy, as well as a skilled warrior.
Yeah. He's no mutant son of a survived Cersei and Jaime, but he's all right as a protagonist.
He's no Boulder Mutant? Is that what you're saying?
He's no Boulder Mutant.
I'm gonna keep on working on that pitch, though. I'm gonna just try and tighten it up.
Boulder mutant with laser eyes.
Boulder? What are you talking about?
Boulder. Oh. It comes from under a boulder.
I thought you were, for a minute, I thought you were talking about the boulder from Last Airbender. The boulder
enters Game of Thrones.
But that's a nice transition, Dave, because they are making
Avatar
Last Airbender, Avatar the Last Airbender animated movies. There's three of them in development.
Oh, I heard that.
And they're from the original creators, and one of the director of the first one is one of the directors from the show. And the first one, all we know about is maybe it's going to focus on the Earth Kingdom somehow.
Oh, I was hoping they were going to animate some of the comics that they
For Zuko's mom to get her dad.
Right, maybe, but I don't know. I mean, they did work on all those. They could definitely do that.
Yeah, and it seems like it's one of those things like, you know, when they did the comic book of Mad Love that had Harley Quinn's origin, it won an Eisner in like 1994 or something like that, but they were right to make it as an animated thing and expose it to the larger audience. Yeah. The comic readership was probably like 100,000 or something like that. Yeah. The viewership of the Batman animated series was tens of millions, mm-hmm. I'm sure.
But if you tell me that they're wanting to make a prequel that looks at the Earth Kingdom, I'd be down for that too.
I'm for it.
Essentially, if it has most or all of those major creative team members, we know these guys can put together an amazing show.
Yeah.
It would only be a question of like, do they lose a step somewhere? It has been a little bit.
We also heard this is news that Dave has been waiting for, and to me to a lesser extent. There's a Wonder Man TV show in development.
Right. You're like who?
Enter Jimon Hansu.
Yes. Wonder Man is for the Avengers, an obscure Avenger. If you're a Marvel fan, you probably know who he is. But he's a super strong guy who kind of doesn't want to be a superhero. He wanted to be an actor. And I often think of him as being like sort of a superhero version of what's that psychological term? Imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does. Sometimes he's like, I shouldn't even be here. I'm not up with these guys.
But he's like stronger than Thor. And
he's as strong as Thor.
He might be stronger.
I don't think so. I had a comic in the 80s, actually, where that comes up. Great comics. One of my first comics is part of the reason I like him. They were doing one of those Old Order Changeth issues.
Yeah.
Moondragon was messing with people's heads. But the point is, at the end, when all the heroes are leaving and they've figured out who they're going to bring in, Hercules walks up to him and he's like, I don't even know why all these people are here. He's like, who even are you? And he's like, hey, I'm like almost as strong as Thor. And Hercules is like, really? Have at thee! And he like punches him through a wall and they end up brawling and then they become friends. And Hercules is like, I know some people in Hollywood. I can connect you.
Yeah.
And it's super fun. So I like Wonder Man. I've heard that they are maybe going to do a little bit of like inside Hollywood in the MCU.
I mean, that makes sense.
That's the rumor.
Satire is what I heard.
Yeah, that sounds a little weird to me. That's because like he's in the comics. He's still an Avenger first and foremost. The Hollywood stuff is always like flavor.
But I mean, they're taking She-Hulk and they're going to do the legal stuff. That makes sense. Miss Marvel is so much about the being a Muslim, being from Pakistan.
I think
that's a good thing for TV.
I think at the moment the MCU doesn't have an Avengers team. So I think the inverse of them sort of becoming an Avengers team.
The interesting thing is if, you know, this would require some special effects, but in like action sequence type stuff, like this guy could essentially take the role of Hulk or Thor.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, they're going to have built up, I think what's going to happen is they're going to have built up a phase four. I mean, Kevin Feige is out there saying, hey, as phase four winds down, you're going to see more of what we're doing.
Yeah.
But they got to be building the new Avengers team because they've got female Thor, they're going to have Wonder Man, they're going to have She-Hulk, they're going to have Miss Marvel, they're going to have all these characters, Moon Knight, who else have they done? Like all these characters that they've developed and done in shows.
Yeah.
Shang-Chi. Like they will have built up all these characters and they can put together a completely different Avengers that we've never seen in the comics.
Doctor Strange,
sure.
Yep.
I think that'll be interesting. We'll see where they go. And of course, there's also the Young Avengers being developed as well. But what's interesting is this is Shang-Chi director Destin Daniel Creighton is working with Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Community writer Andrew Guest. Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Community are both great shows.
Those
guys
really
I would trust to do that.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about this. I hope it's good.
Do we think Nathan Fillion is still going to do it?
I don't know. He's a little old for it, right? But it would kind of fit.
I love the idea that he's so old. I see him like on a weekly basis when The Rookie is in production, doing like action and like stunts and all this stuff. So he's actually in probably some of the best shape he's been in his
but
life.
But I have a feeling that what they're going to do is get somebody a little younger so they can keep with the role. So maybe it'll probably be more of an unknown or someone that we won't immediately think of.
The reason, by the way, we mentioned Nathan Fillion is because he was associated with the role like 5-6 years ago or something.
He was going to be Guardians, right?
Yeah, he was going to show up. Too. And there's even, you know, some production art and things like that and Easter eggs, but it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
And I don't think it probably will, but I would say it's like maybe a possibility. I don't know.
I bet it'll be a younger guy.
Probably so.
All right. The last three news items we got are all development stuff. Nicole Kessel, who's a director who worked on Westworld and Leftovers, The Americans, is going to direct a She-Ra live-action show on Amazon Prime.
Saw that.
Which is interesting. I assume that's based on the cartoon.
Nope.
No.
It is its own property. So it will be a reinterpretation just like anything else.
Will she be fighting Hordak?
That punch is probably almost certain, I would think.
Let me ask you guys a question. Other than the animated series, which of course is like a queer icon show, and is really... Is She-Ra that interesting? Any more than like He-Man?
I mean, maybe not, but like it has like fierce nostalgic value.
Yeah.
And she, like, in kind of like a pop icon way, is as remembered for 80s, by his 80s kids as Wonder Woman and like other characters like that.
Agreed.
Anybody who, it's that power toys hold over us.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we like the G.I. Joe comic a lot, but part of that was definitely tied into we were buying the toys, right? So yeah, anybody who's getting She-Ra, she was one of the first really big female action figures that was like an action figure and not a doll.
Correct.
And so that's pretty notable. They do, I know this was a part of the, She-Ra TV show. Well, like the cartoon that they recently did, the very queer friendly one, also had a bunch of other fun dynamics going on. And they did a thing that I think was at least loosely taken from the original, which is that She-Ra was originally on the side of the Horde.
Yep.
She had been like sort of brainwashed, raised to think that they were the good guys. That's pretty interesting to have a hero who essentially starts off on the wrong side. And then they came up with a bunch of other interesting stuff. There's this solid supporting cast, and if you watch the new one, they're really well developed, just differently from the original cartoon, I'm sure. So, honestly, though, because I like the newer cartoon so well, to me it'll be disappointing that they're not adapting that.
Yeah.
It could be its own thing. It could be its own thing. It seems like her pedigree is pretty good, the director.
Yeah, it's a really great list. The Cobra Kai creators, who I think we all like, are developing a Duke Nukem film.
That's so weird.
That is very weird.
Only about 25 years late, or whatever it is. Do people even remember Duke Nukem?
I think there's nostalgia.
Don't you think this is one of those like the Chippendale Rescue Rangers thing where it's like the path the jokes you made that you made the movie in the first place?
Right.
It's got to be a little meta, or it's not going to work.
Yeah, I can see that.
And the Cobra Kai guys seem like guys, but also they seem like the Karate Kid and Cobra Kai, for as much as it is like it pokes fun at all of it.
Has
and
some
how
heart.
Silly it is, those karate gangs. They obviously love all of them. And they love it so much that they had clearly seen, like, Karate Kid 3, which, by the way, if you've never seen it, is terrible. It's a really, really bad movie.
Yeah, I think if anybody's going to make it, they are the right guys. And this is probably a decent time for it. For anybody who doesn't know, in the, early mid-90s, late 90s?
I think mid-90s.
Duke Nukem was one of the first games after the huge breakout Doom.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the biggest first-person shooter after Castle Wolfenstein. Duke Nukem came along and presented this guy who was basically like Guy Gardner from DC Comics, in a kind of near future setting, I guess, where Earth gets attacked by aliens, and he is like this guy who kind of looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger and like talks. He used a lot of pre-existing movie catchphrases like the "I'm here to kick ass and chew bubblegum"
right.
from They Live. He pulled a bunch of stuff from Bruce Campbell's Evil Dead movie stuff, and. Yeah, he kicked ass, and he was like also like a sexist pig back when that was like a real laugh riot, and had funny voice acting and good lines. Honestly, the opening I feel sums it up. When the game begins, you've been shot down and like landed on a building, like whatever vehicle he was in has been shot down, and you know, you look up and see your ship crashing, and Duke in his very trademark voice goes, he's like, "Damn, those alien bastards are gonna pay for shooting up my ride." So that was like, that's the first line of the game, is payback on aliens for shooting him down.
I think what you want to do is something almost like Austin Powers kind of thing, where he has a modern day like aware person who's, and he's the goofy like Maybe get who's David Putty? Who's the guy who played David Putty?
Oh, it's
you know what I'm talking about, Patrick Warburton.
Yeah.
Maybe get Patrick Warburton to play Duke Nukem, and then you have a younger guy who's like his just embarrassed by this weird.
You know what that spot follows is that's the same pattern sort of used in Demolition Man.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a man out of time in that.
Yeah.
I could see something like that. I could see a meta version. Yeah. I could also see them playing it straight and just being so over the top that it's almost like one of those things like Crank.
Yep.
And stuff like that, just ridiculous action movies.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think you probably like tone down some of the cheesy sexism stuff. But by the way, the other thing Duke Nukem was known for is like it had really good level design. That's not something you really particularly can translate to a game. A lot of its attitude and stuff like that. Yeah. Fun aliens, like aliens had like shrink rays and stuff like that. And if you got their gun, you could shrink them down and stomp on them. Like they were fun. It was a fun game with good level design and super. I guess what I would say is it delivered the fun level design and it was very empowering. You felt like everything you did was fun.
Yeah.
In it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I hope it happens. I loved Duke Nukem.
So, if you thought that story was weird...
Okay.
I have a weirder one to
listen, tell. We've already made it past the Twisted Metal TV show. Duke Nukem is actually less weird than that, I think.
It is, however, Twisted Metal is also less weird than the one I'm about to read you, I believe.
Go on.
Neil Blomkamp, you remember the guy, the critically acclaimed...
District 9, the big District 9 starter, somehow ended up making Chappie, which was a little less well-received.
But he was in line to do an Alien movie.
Yeah, yep, yes. He was about to be Hollywood's golden child for sci-fi, but it didn't quite happen.
But instead, he's making Gran Turismo.
That and sounds about right for him, honestly.
Gran Turismo is based on a true story... The ultimate wish fulfillment of a teenage Gran Turismo player whose gaming skills won a series of Nissan competitions to become an actual professional race car driver.
Now, but this is tied also into the video game series Gran Turismo, yes. Right? Which people from the early or mid-90s will remember as the realistic driving game.
Yeah.
The one where you could...
used licensed cars.
Used licensed cars. One of the first game to at least do it with real money behind it and stuff. And you would adjust your... brakes and shocks and
highly upgradable
everything. Your alignment, all that stuff, you know, your tires, everything can be adjusted in this game. It was for like car wonks.
In this movie we will have robot and alien parts that you can put on your car.
No, I guess so there's a kid who played the game. Is that the deal in real life?
Yes, he played the game and he was so good at it, he got to go to Nissan driving competitions and somehow...
And then he became an actual driver.
His driving skills in Gran Turismo translated to becoming an actual driver.
So, more than anything, in this way, this is probably going to be maybe like a pop or maybe more serious sort of biopic?
Yeah.
About a kid who made good in a weird way?
I mean, I can see a version of this that's fun. I don't know if I can see a version of this that's fun that Neil Blomkamp makes.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan.
That guy has not made great movies.
I mean, like, even his most loved one, District 9, which I think has some merits and, like, you know, like, kind of on the side of its social message and things like that, for sure. But I thought it was heavy-handed and just okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about all of his movies. They're just okay.
Yeah.
All right,
Gran Turismo kid. Looks like you might be in a just okay movie. But sure. you know, for the sake of that kid, I hope it goes well.
We have now entered the era of all things video games, though.
Yeah. We had a good video game show. We had Halo.
We got Halo.
Although it's controversial as to whether that's good or not, but...
Well, people are dumb.
I've seen a fair amount of fondness for it.
Yeah.
Sometimes even a slightly grudging fondness, like people who's like, they changed too much, but it's pretty good. You know, that kind of thing.
All right. That is all our news for the week. We're going to take a second, then we're going to come back and talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of June 22nd, 2022.
Yep.
It was kind of a big week.
It was for me a week of pleasant surprises.
There a couple of my favorites came out this week. There's some new stuff. A couple anticipated graphic novels.
I had some of my least favorites come out. No,
we're not talking about that.
So I want to be relentlessly negative today.
Let's start with the thing we all want to talk about first, which is Nightwing. There's a new issue of Nightwing this week. It's great. It remains one of the best comics on the stands.
Sure.
Someone stole my copy, so I can't pull it up and look at it. but
got a great cover. It has great moments.
Yep.
There's a
fantastic Bruno Redondo art.
Basically, the interesting thing in this, without even getting into any specifics, is that you know Nightwing came into this massive fortune that Alfred had quietly stocked away before dying a year or two back in the comics, and Alfred has willed it to him, right? And he is trying to do all this rather altruistic stuff to improve the city and the lives of people in Bloodhaven, the city he protects.
He's trying to be a good billionaire.
And get this money circulated. He is basically... the powers that be don't like what he's doing with it.
Well, there's a
and they set of... him up hardcore in this one.
Yeah, there's a little backlash from the old white people who are in charge.
Yes.
Yep. He's fighting the cops.
He's fighting the cops in it. He was also, like, over in the pages of Superman... run into Luther, who's Luther runs long cons, and Luther was like, "Oh, I was actually very impressed with what you did." But there was like this, because he's Luther, it's kind of like you can tell he's got an angle he's working, he's setting up something.
But there's also some notable things with the Heartless subplot.
Yep, and Blockbuster, and the
Blockbuster.
Big basically who is like the kingpin of Bloodhaven, and there's some rivalry going on between them.
Also, some notable stuff with Barbara.
Yes, yeah, that was I like all of her appearances in this. I like that. I feel like Tom Taylor gets their relationship. And look at that dope cover by Bruno Redondo.
Yep,
who continues to knock it out of the park.
Yeah.
And incidentally, the Nightwing, the second hardcover, Fear State, comes out this week. So it's the second part of Tom Taylor and Bruno Redondo's run. It's really good. Although I think this is I think Robbie Rodriguez is the artist on this one instead of Bruno Redondo, but it is still quite good.
I liked all the guest artists that they had during Fear State. I feel like, I don't know if it was just one person or if there was maybe more than one, but I liked all of those artists.
Yeah, definitely worth a read. Best comic on the stands, bar none, I think.
Eh, okay.
Dave thinks Superman, Son of Kal-El. The important thing, as long as Tom Taylor is the one writing it. We all agree on that, right?
I might like some James Tynion comics better.
No, that's wrong.
But if you're like a baby who likes superheroes, like we are half the time, and Randy is all the time, then yes, he's still in the top three.
You know what I like better than superheroes, though, is gay superheroes. And this is a good month for it. Two weeks ago, we had DC's Pride stuff.
Yep.
This week, we got Marvel Voices Pride number one, which is their 2022 Pride special. They've done a few of these.
DC, I feel like, has been overall, as far as like celebrating Pride Month and being supporting the LGBT community, has been doing a broadly better job.
Yep.
But I think from what you, I haven't read this yet. You said that, though, that you might have liked these individual stories better than the DC Pride special.
I think I did, in part because I'm like, oh, that character's gay or bi, or I didn't know that. There's seven stories in here. The lead story is a Young Avengers story with Loki, Hulkling, and Wiccan as the focus, and America. So basically, the queer Young Avengers, which is like half the Young Avengers.
Yep.
That was fun. And then there's a Hercules and Marvel Boy story, which is really good.
Yep.
There's a D-Man story, Project Mitigo. D-Man's gay? D-Man's one of my favorite characters.
Yep.
I was surprised to see that, and I thought it was really well done. There's a Guardians of the Galaxy story with... Phi Lavelle and
Moondragon.
Yep. There's some new characters introduced. There's one of Marvel's first trans characters is introduced in here.
Huh.
And in the back they've got Marvel Universe entries for these new characters.
So, oh, that's cool. Like the old handbook of the Marvel Universe stuff. Yep.
And also again a few characters I like. Viv Vision is in here as a queer character, and I didn't know that was a thing. And superhero designer Jumbo Carnation.
Yeah, that's the person who behind, I guess, most of the outfits in fiction for the X-Men Hellfire Club gala.
Yep. And then we've got Northstar's husband gets an entry. It's a really good little special. And,
nice.
And I thought it has a lot of really good art. Will probably be people that you'll recognize in the future as like, oh, this was their first story.
Right.
Definitely worth a look. Moon's Girl gets a new series that's going to be a series of one-shots. Teaming her up with various Marvel characters. This is Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur with Miles Morales.
Well, there is going to be a through line through all of them, and she's trying to find Devil Dinosaur, who has disappeared.
Right.
Oh, that's like her duo thing. She can't function without a dinosaur.
But she's super smart, Dave.
She needs
Yeah, but wouldn't you rather be super smart and have a dinosaur than super smart and not have a dinosaur?
Well, she's trying to find him.
It's better to have a dinosaur and not need one than to need a dinosaur and not have one.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
That is a good point.
It's great art in that.
Why'd she lose her dinosaur?
That's the mystery.
I mean, she was a young girl. Young girls lose their dinosaurs all the time.
You just got to learn to be a little bit more, pay more attention to your giant T-Rex.
Be more responsible about your dinosaurs. Anyway, it's really good, and
thanks for mansplaining dinosaurs, Randy.
You're welcome. And next issue will be Captain Marvel. So
nice.
Peter David has another sort of flashback miniseries.
Yeah, like a retro-y kind of vibed miniseries.
Like the symbiote Spider-Man.
Yep.
And the,
but this one is themed around the Fantastic Four replacement group of the 90s, a.k.a. the new Fantastic Four. Who had like kind of some of the then hottest characters of the era. So what do we got?
Spider-Man, Wolverine, Ghost Rider, and Grey Hulk.
Yeah. Grey Hulk was like the gangster Hulk.
He was a thing.
Yeah, he was like a Vegas mob enforcer, bouncer kind of dude, yeah.
So if you want some more stories of them fighting the supernatural, well, you can find that here.
Because, yeah, that story that had them in it was just a one-shot story in the Fantastic Four, in itself kind of spoofing the fact that pot characters would be just dropped into a book to sell.
Yeah.
Comics. And then there was a slightly tongue-in-cheek story that also happened to be a good story with them in Walt Simonson Fantastic Four run. Cool art by Art Adams. And now though, a chance to revisit that.
And then we got a one-shot. This is another series of one-shots thing. Apparently Marvel's doing that now. Punisher War Journal Blitz. This is by Torin Grunberg, which I still think is a fake name. Art by Lan Medina, who's really, really good. This is a one-shot of the new Punisher facing off against the Hatemonger.
Yep. And, of course, the new Punisher is still Frank Castle. It's just that things have changed for Frank Castle.
He's more of a sword dude than a gun dude.
Yep. He's got some ties. He's got ties to the Hand, the mystic ninja guys that Daredevil fights. His family has returned somewhat.
Sort of.
Yeah.
So if you've been reading this at all, this is another additional fun issue, I think.
Yeah.
And if you haven't, it's actually not a bad intro to the new status quo.
That's correct.
So it kind of works on both levels, and I got to appreciate that. I'm weirded out by the why didn't you just make it a miniseries, or even why are they doing a spinoff book when this book's only like 3 issues old, but it's good, so I can't complain too much about it. Switching over to DC, we have a comic that was clearly meant to promote 2 movies that are not coming out this year anymore. That is Aquaman the Flash Void Song. Written by the Captain America Sentinel of Liberty creators, Kelly Lanzig. This is the new Abnett Lanning writing team, apparently. These guys do all their writing together.
Oh, interesting.
The basic pitch here is that there's these weird aliens that freeze everything on Earth, except that Flash was in the Speed Force and Aquaman was deep under the ocean, so they avoided being frozen, and they have to team up to basically save Earth from these aliens. But they don't actually know each other that well, other than having been on the Justice League together.
So here's the thing. Although I'm sure DC is like, gee, we would like to promote that as those movies are being released, and there's all this chaos going on with the movies. But that's a good premise.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, for sure. Dark Crisis is a couple things this week. There's a Flash issue that ties in. There's a 6-issue miniseries called Dark Crisis Young Justice that reunites Tim Drake, Connell, Bart Allen, and Cassie Sandsmark. The
Young Justice team of the 1990s.
Young Justice team of the 90s.
Yeah.
And there's something weird going on. They're like in alternate worlds. So, yeah, if you have a fondness for that team, this is a chance to see more of them. There is a 12-issue Black Adam miniseries.
Oh, it is a miniseries. It's not ongoing.
Nope, it's a miniseries.
It's got Christopher Priest writing.
Yep.
You might know him from such comics as Black Panther and Quantum and Woody in the 90s and I don't know, a bunch of other stuff.
Rafa Sandoval on art. Art's really nice.
Mm-hmm. It is.
He's looking to do that kind of thing where of shaking things up a little bit for Black Adam, tweaking a little bit of how his powers work and like just the dynamics of the thing, I guess I'd say. So, if you're a Priest fan or just looking for some Black Adam stuff, which this is probably a good time for, worth checking out.
Yeah. This is a weird one. Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen's boss, Perry White.
That's right.
It's a one-shot. It's got a lot sort of reprints from the Jimmy Olsen series, Action Comics, Superman 80-page giant, stuff from anywhere from
But this
the
is a
70s.
Focus on Perry White, the newspaper editor, and what I say the best tough love boss in comics.
Yep.
He's always been the quintessential newspaper editor, you know, chewing out his staff, but in order to get good stories.
But the thing that's important is, if you like the Fraction Lieber Jimmy Olsen stories, comic, there is a brand new 7-page story in this that is sort of the bookend of the whole
thing. I assume it also has Perry White in it.
It's all Perry White stories. Okay. So yes, Milestones in History is a late celebration of Black History Month.
Yes,
but basically it is the milestone characters narrating tales of actual icons of Black history. So everyone from the Queen Sheba to, I think...
I heard that Hannibal was in there, Hannibal like Alps crossing Hannibal.
Yep.
And Alexander Dumas.
Yep.
Three Musketeers, man. Yep. That's I just saw like this meme going around, and I'd known that for a while. But like, yeah, a lot of people don't realize he was Black. it's just a lesser known thing. The guy behind Man in the Iron Mask, Three Musketeers.
Also, there's a story of Prince.
Oh, that's dope.
Yep. Yeah.
Sometimes we forget about heroes, modern day heroes.
Yeah, but kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
Jumping over to Image, who also had a big week, we have Beware the Eye of Odin, which is a new. There's this prince of a sort of like Viking kingdom who gets attacked by a troll and discovers that all the magic items that he thought were just stories are true, and that he has the Eye of Odin and he needs to return it.
And so he goes is like sort of Norse mythology action adventure stuff.
Yeah, he goes out in the world with a guy who used to be a warrior and now is sort of a blacksmith and this has to prove himself. He's an older retired warrior. They meet a woman out in the woods who is also, I think she's a Valkyrie, and this feels a little bit like a D&D adventure. And it also features a battle swine.
Yes, and has cool art.
That's cool art. I hate this place. We didn't talk about this when it came out because it was a week that we got our comics late. But this is a new Image book from Kyle Starks with art by Artyom Toplin.
And we should say right up front, there's a variant cover that uses the original title of this, which was, hide the kids away for a second, Fuck This Place.
Fuck This Place.
Yes.
There was some retailer outcry and they decided to call it I Hate This Place, and the Fuck This Place is a variant. Which, by the way, also happened with I Hate Fairyland. Because originally, yep. I Hate Fairyland was called Fuck Fairyland.
Yep. That said, it seemed to work out for I Hate Fairyland.
And it's working out for I Hate This Place, but retailers keep
they're like scolds. They're like little Puritans sometimes.
I want to go on record as I was the retail forum saying, no, this is great, I love it.
I say fuck Rogues Gallery.
This is a woman, it's a lesbian couple, inherits a haunted house.
Yep, and it seems like not, and maybe even just beyond being haunted, sort of a nexus for weirdness.
Yeah, not just haunted, but like there's UFO weirdness. The house seems to be a protective place, but you have to get into it.
This has like super good art, by the way.
Yeah,
and like the interesting thing is, like I thought that between the kind of weirdness, I thought that the writing on the couple was pretty good.
They're
interesting and very different people. One of them is like she's kind of like a gun nut.
Yes, right. She's a prepper.
Yeah.
She's like, they get this farm, and she's like, okay, so let's turn this place into a doomsday bunker. And she's like, are we really going to do this again?
Yep. and so they have, like rather differing personalities, which makes them a fun and interesting couple to watch. And they, again, super good art. I like the first issue. Haven't read this week's second issue yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Dark Horse has a new book this week called The Lonesome Hunters. It is artist Tyler Crook's first go at writing. He is also drawing. Tyler Crook, you might know from BPRD, Six Gun.
What's the horror, other Colin horror series?
Bunn,
H. What's the one we did it for book club one time? The Cullen Bunn horror book, the skinned man on the front, the sentient skin.
Harrow County.
Harrow County.
Yeah.
His art. We have often pointed people to Harrow County as much for his art as the writing on it.
So the premise of this is there's a young man who gets a magic sword about 100 years ago, and he is part of like a monster hunting crew, a church of monster hunters, basically. And he runs away, but the sword makes him immortal. And he basically has been sort of living this quiet life of desperation, and it seems like now, in this old age, he's going to get more into monster hunting.
Or magic revisits his life in a way that he has to react as opposed to running away the last time.
It reminds a little bit of, like, Up, this sort of grumpy old man, but instead of having a house full of balloons, he's got a magic sword.
Sure, Up with monsters. I
it's
like
up
it.
Up with monsters.
No, I really enjoyed this. Tyler Crook is one of those artists that I will just, whatever he's doing, I'll check in, just because he's got such a unique look, and I love his coloring, and I really enjoyed this issue.
Iron Man also has a new book, Clementine Book 1. This is Skybound's first YA graphic novel. They're going to do a few of these. There's a few coming out.
But this is notable because...
Because it's from the world of Walking Dead, but also it's Tilly Walden, who has written Spinning on a Sunbeam and Are You Listening? She's won two Eisners. These are books from First Second. They're all in our diverse voices. They sell really, really well. She's a really good artist-writer. And
this is also derived from the very popular Walking Dead Telltale video game series, right. In which was Clementine the lead?
Clementine is not sort of, at first she's not the lead, she's sort of the co-lead. She's the voice of reason, the person who needs rescuing from the lead character, that kind of thing.
And I don't know what age she's supposed
to be.
She
is now, I think, in her 20s.
Oh, is she? I thought she was younger than that. I thought she was mid or late teens.
Looks like she's a teenager now. She is a little kid in the video game originally.
Okay, yeah.
Right? This is in the
I believe
second
she is
game.
The age of the target audience for this. I read about a fourth of this and I really liked it. She is on her own. She is having trouble walking because she has she lost a foot at some point to probably a zombie bite or something like that.
Yep.
And that's causing her pain. And she ends up running into this rather kindly Amish community, which is one of those things you don't really... I don't know if they've ever really touched on that in any Walking Dead thing.
But they're like,
boy, talk about a group that's ready for society's collapse and doesn't need power to survive.
Yeah.
But yeah, really, this guy, like, helps her reseat her, like, the sort of the thing she walks on, shows her a lot of tricks to get around better. There's some subtle character stuff, good writing in it. And it is like a true graphic novel. Like, it's long enough that I can tell there's going to be some depth to it.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it sort of gets to at some point. I didn't get to it when I was reading it. But I think she's in Vermont, and I think she ends up, like, holing up at a ski lodge, I think, where there's some other survivors. They're just trying to get away from the walkers, of course. And anyway, this was really good. I have not watched Walking Dead in years and years and years.
Yeah.
I have not read Walking Dead in years and years and years. There is actually a chance I will buy this because I liked what I read so much.
Well, that's what's interesting. I think that Walking Dead people will be glad to see more of the Walking Dead world, more of Clementine if you like the game.
Yep.
But I think none of us here is a Walking Dead fan, but this is a good graphic novel.
Yeah. Yeah, it you know, it functions. I was saying this is like when you don't have like the other big named characters from Walking Dead like Rick or Daryl or whoever, that... You know, this just kind of becomes another kind of zombie story. And it's, I don't know, it might be better written than the show.
And who doesn't like zombie stories? I mean, Nick. But who else doesn't like zombie stories?
And even Nick will sometimes like a zombie story.
I like good zombie stories.
It's true. In the even weirder realm, there is a full-color graphic novel from Viz
kind
and
of
Marvel.
Somewhat manga style.
Called Secret Reverse. It is story and art by Yu-Gi-Oh! Creator Kazuki Takahashi. That is odd enough.
But
what it is about... is an evil card game creator fighting Tony Stark and Spider-Man. And it very much appears that Kazuki has made himself a supervillain to face off of these characters.
Yep. And a card game like as a centerpiece to it, which also sounds like a fun idea.
It is bonkers.
Yeah.
And it's got that. It's got good art. Like, I think a lot of people will really enjoy this. So I guess this is in... There's a little bit of journal in the back of, like... the creator wanted to make a Western style comic, and Marvel came to him and he's like, what can I do? And so he saw Endgame, and then he made Secret Verse as a fan comic packed with all my love for Marvel, which is just delightful. Also, just for me, this is a few of my favorites this week. Moon Knight came out, is another really good issue. Radiant Black and Rogue Sun can be really good. And I know y'all have been really digging Amazing Spider-Man.
I think there are aspects of it that I'm still trying to wrap my head around. But for the most part, I'm enjoying it.
Well, I'm reading Spider-Man for the first time in several years. Spencer's run didn't get me. Slott's run had its moments. But also, like, there was something where, like, Slott's run can be a little... I don't want to quite say toothless, but it just like it's just not what maybe something that I'm looking for. Maybe I needed Spider-Man to be a little more different. And this kind of darker run Has been more interesting to me. It's brought something I haven't seen to the table.
That run also did not have glorious artwork by John Romita Jr.
That's right. Yeah, he is good at handling the sort of I'm going to say the urban brutality style of stuff in Spider-Man. It's not that it's that brutal a comic, but when there are fights and stuff in this, they look pretty tough.
I think you coined a pretty good phrase with this being the Die Hard issue.
Oh, it is
Spider-Man. Yeah. Because it Spider-Man totally is
like straight up on the ropes at the beginning, like bound up in this like really like unbreakable looking contraption.
Tombstone has kind of screwed him in a lot of
ways. He's been beaten up. Yes. He's already been beaten up. And they're about to kill him, and he managed to get loose. And, yeah, he's, like, all sneaking around in the ceilings, busting through doors and windows on him and stuff like that, and kind of having to Die Hard take him down. And, yeah, it's good. What I was saying the other day is, I don't know, it's a little hard for me to imagine that the sort of darker mysteries and stuff that they've been dangling in this will end well. Now, I could be surprised, and it could come through for me, but, yeah, right at the moment, I'm, like, enjoying the ride, don't know if I'll like where it lands.
Right.
But that's kind of what I remember thinking, like, throughout the entire run of Grant Morrison's New X-Men, which became a favorite.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see. I'll be especially curious to see where they end on what will be the first trade of it.
Yeah.
Which will be probably in about two issues.
Yeah. All right, that's Comics of the Week. We're going to take a break and then come back and talk about some TV and movies. All right, we've got a few things to talk about here. I think the big thing you guys want to talk about, this new dinosaur movie people are all agog about?
Number one in the country, fool.
For the second week, it destroyed Lightyear.
Yeah, yeah. Nick and I, we haven't had a chance to talk about this, but we both saw this separately.
Yeah.
And now it's time to catch up.
Yes.
Before you guys say anything, I'm going to guess. All right. Nick loved it. Dave has some issues with it.
This is semi-true.
I don't know if I need to watch it again, because my experience watching it kind of sucked. So I need to rewatch it again.
That theater experience?
Yeah.
Not like the sound design was bad.
No, it was just really, like, distracting, like, the people who were, like, bringing food and stuff, stand in front of the screen for, like, a minute at a time.
That.
So I missed shit.
Some people who I think were sneaking into the theater, who sat in a few seats down from me in the row, and they were, like, talking.
Oh.
Yeah. They were at least whispering, but I was like, man, are they going to be whispering throughout this whole goddamn thing? And I was, like, getting ready to have words, but they, at some point, I think they must have been like, let's go sneak into something else, and they went and snuck into something else, I guess. They just left.
However.
So, sure.
On the whole, I enjoyed Jurassic World Dominion.
I did too. I liked Jurassic World Dominion. I had some issues with it. I felt like it could have used a script punch up. The characters that return in it, although it's fun seeing them, there's a lot of memorable dialogue in the first Jurassic Park.
There are.
You know, anything from like that's a big pile of dino shit to you know, God creates man makes dinosaurs eat man,
bit. And I feel like they make a lot of callbacks to all those things.
They do, but fewer callbacks than I'd say Top Gun had.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I'd heard differently, but
I mean, depending on, like, you might see it differently, but, like, there's a character who shows in this who we haven't seen since then, but, like, just the use of the character, they weren't like, remember when? There was one scene where they did had to do with the shaving cream thing that Nedry had.
Yeah.
But it just shows up. But, like, I feel like this felt like it was sort of forward-thinking in the sense that the plot was all in the here and now. And let's just, I'm going to quick say what the plot was.
Okay.
As you know, at the end, or as people know, if you've seen Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, at the end of it, dinosaurs got loose into the real world.
Yes.
And through a combination of them getting loose and also black market stuff getting loose, they're spread around the world in general, but, like, they are kind of isolated somewhat in, like, some state park, I think they said, is, like, where the majority of them are.
Yeah, but there are, like, the giant fish one. I never remember that?
That's not the ichthyosaur. Mosasaur.
Yeah, the Mosasaur is running rampant because you can't stop that thing.
Yeah. The opening sequence, actually, where there's, like, a news retrospective, same way we would have, like, you know, any big thing like it's the 9/11 retrospective or something like that, yeah. where they're like, it was, you know, 3 years ago today that, you know, that our world changed forever. And you do see that, like, kind of people have to deal with this everywhere now. There's dangers, but there's also cute dinosaurs and stuff around. And anyway, that is going on. But there is also a... I guess we should... This is where I'll throw out the spoiler warning, because this is going to get into some of the plot stuff. Something that wasn't in any of the trailers, which is that, like, there's a big crop die-off going on. And the crop die-off is happening across the, like, at least the United States, maybe worldwide... Because of these rather giant locusts. They're not like giant like a car, but they're like more like the size of a cat.
Yes, they are.
They're really gross looking.
Because they have been mutated and engineered with Cretaceous DNA.
Yep.
And
by the company that was like the initial problem in the original Jurassic Park that Neji was trying to connect with. Biosyn.
In fact, the main villain of this is Hodgson from the Dennis Nedry was talking.
Dodgson.
Yeah.
We've got Dodgson here. You know what he now looks like? He looks like a older white haired but tech bro kind of guy, or like not Elon Musk, but like a Bezos or something like that.
Yeah.
He is not the guy he was before, but he is equally skeevy. There's also some sub-boss villains, I'm going to say, like the kidnappers who are after the girl who was the clone in the second Jurassic World movie. And she is currently living with, Claire and... Owen,
yeah.
And those characters, the stars of essentially Jurassic World, will shortly, within an hour of this fairly long 2.5-hour movie, will end up meeting up with the original heroes, Ellie, Dr. Grant.
And Ian Malcolm.
And although this ranges around from, like an almost James Bondian sequence in Malta.
Yeah. That was a cool sequence.
There's several cool sequences in here that I really liked. The opening, the first scene you see with Claire, which I think is the opening of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know that as of the second movie, she had become essentially a dinosaur rights activist.
Yeah.
And here we see that this was actually also some of the darkest the movies have ever been. She breaks into a place, this like ranch, where they're like capturing and like breeding like little triceratopses.
It's like outside of Houston or somewhere like West Texas.
Something like that. And they have them in pens, which this also could be considered an animal rights thing, because this is like what we actually do with animals.
Yeah.
There's little baby triceratopses with their heads unable to turn because they're in pens that like keep them locked in place. And they're like documenting it. She's got the people from the previous who were with her group in the previous movies.
Yep.
And they're like, okay, we've got this documented. We can blow the lid off this place. And she's like, yeah, that's not good enough. We have to rescue it. And so there's a big opening chase sequence, which has a very satisfying bit when things are kind of looking bad for them, and like the big triceratopses come out and like smash the shit out of the bad guys.
I think there's some cool moments throughout the entire. Yep. The Malta sequence is really cool.
There's like underground like dinosaur cockfighting is all I can call it. It's funny. That sounds funny, but it's actually depressing in the moment, because you see like all the worst stuff we do in real life has been applied to dinosaurs now. And I'm like, oh, this movie is dark.
If you think about it for even more than a second, you kind of are like, oh, wait a minute.
They're being exploited at like a really gross level. So that's why the sort of vengeance scenes on the bad people, you know, when they get eaten by a dinosaur or something smashed in some way, pretty satisfying.
Yeah, agreed.
But Biosyn is the big bad guys in this. There's a lot of stuff that deals with the kind of massive preserve that they have, which is built over like the place where they initially mined the amber or whatever that when they were trying to like duplicate, I think, John Hammond stuff.
Well, from what I understand, the Barbasol can is going to come back as somehow being found during the cartoon Camp Cretaceous.
What are you talking about?
Come back Barbasol in what? Can, that they're going to explain how Biosyn got that back. in the Camp Cretaceous upcoming season.
I mean,
so
I don't think
Camp Cretaceous for Minion to make sense.
I think you should watch Camp Cretaceous just on general principles.
In that same way that the Clone Wars and Rebels cartoons have been sometimes better than the live action movies.
Well, it's also like
Camp Cretaceous has been better than the live action movies.
It's produced by Spielberg and Trevorrow, so it is definitely working hand in hand with the movies.
It's good.
Yeah, I thought this was a good finale.
Yeah, it's one of those where, to some degree, I almost like it more as, like, in the weird way, the same way I kind of like the prequels, which is as a sandbox for kind of, like, Jurassic Park fun. It was pretty cool. Like, and there's, like, neat... The franchise has opened up now to more stories, including, like, that means, like, probably more good and bad. Like, it's never going to be able to achieve the ongoing quality of the first Jurassic Park.
No, but
they're just not going to be able to pull that off again.
But there's still good creature moments. The, Pyroraptor, which is the sort of feathered raptor that goes underneath the ice. And,
like, there's special effects on that, the way it swam, and the way it moved super fast, the way, like, seals and penguins and stuff do when they're underwater. It was as if, like, that's a thing it does.
And I don't know what the name of the dinosaur with, like, the stabby fingernails, the big razors.
Yeah, that was... that wasn't a Spinosaurus?
No. Spinosaurus has the big...
Okay.
The ones in the caves, the Dimetrodon.
I don't know how you pronounce it. You know, that was kind of fun because that was my brother's favorite dinosaur growing up. He had a toy of one.
They're cool.
They are cool. I believe, by the way, technically not dinosaurs.
Right.
They are cool looking.
Alligator.
Like, exactly. But the neat thing is they made them move like alligators.
Yeah.
Part of one of the conceits is that at Biosyn's labs, that they have been, like, essentially... you know, breeding new dinosaurs that are more accurate and don't have the DNA shortcuts that they took before. So that's their way of explaining. It's like, oh, that's why some of these guys have feathers now and look different now. But don't worry, you will get your T-Rex quotient.
You cannot stop the T-Rex.
The T-Rex now has to show up and save them in all of them.
Yeah. We were talking about that and I was like, I had to bite my lip. I was like, yep, nope, that happens again. Yeah. And you know what? I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I was okay with it. It was a crowd-pleasing, sort of satisfying moment as he takes on the bigger predator again.
Nothing can stop the T-Rex.
Yeah. Well, they know what people are there for, I think. But it's not just the dinosaurs. People were there for Dr. Grant and Ellie and stuff like that. There's some pleasing stuff with that. I don't want to get too much into the detail. It was fun to see them. I wish that the writing had been a little better on Ian Malcolm. Like,
he was definitely playing more Jeff Goldblum than Malcolm.
I think so. I think that's exactly right.
Where Malcolm is a little more acidic and kind of there. This is not buffoonery, but it's
he was
a little more quippy
and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, one of the parts that made me laugh the most is there's like a hallway of lots of dead genetically engineered insects in it at one point. And the like Claire and Ellie are going through there, and the guys are like watching on a monitor. They need them to like reboot something in a computer or whatever. And Ian is like on the comm, and he's like, "Why aren't they moving faster?" And we can see that they're like in this just gore-soaked bug hall that with a lot of like half-alive bugs in it, like super disgusting. And he's like, "Go faster," or whatever. Actually, he doesn't do the go faster thing, but as it cracked me up.
I also like seeing the Dilophosaurus again.
The officers. Oh yeah, that's the spitter one. Yep, they get to get a good showpiece. In fact, also we'll see BD Wong's character. What's his name?
Henry Wu.
Henry Wu will show up. He gets some interesting turns. Some cases, I sort of felt like Nick. They were actually getting too many good things that happened to them. Because, you know, there was, like, several people who helped him out along the way.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I could, like, reel off, like, four people who helped him out. That were kind of like they'd be like a friendly NPC in a game.
Yeah,
and I was like, that might have been a little more help than they needed.
Sort of akin to like people realizing what Biosyn was doing, and like, oh wait a minute, we can't really. This is like,
above and beyond.
I mean, the locusts were literally killing every like.
It was like they could cause mass global starvation.
Yeah, completely. It was like the end of our. The extinction of us.
Although I think that Biosyn's plan, if I were to pare it down, I think what they wanted to do was cause
partial global starvation, sell off their own genetically engineered crops, become richer, invest more in themselves and all of their tech, and just become, like, you know, as indispensable in their way as, like, Amazon is.
Yeah, oh, completely.
But anyway,
I couldn't see any real-world parallels
at
all.
Not at all. I don't see any exploitation parallels. But yes, in fact, there is something. There is a little bit more going on beneath this dinosaur movie, but it's also not exactly a deep movie.
No, it's a really good popcorn flick.
Yeah,
and
when they were doing the all but spy stuff in Malta, busting into the illegal preserve and motorcycle chases and dinosaurs loose and stuff in the streets,
a nice little
like
cameo
the music
from...
even sounded like Bond music, and Michael Giacchino does the score. He's always good. But yeah, I had a good time, but I do think it's one to go in with kind of moderate expectations. Yeah,
agreed.
Good to know. I will see it as I've seen all the Jurassic World movies on video, on my TV.
Well, apparently,
in the case of the second one, in partial bits when Nick makes me watch it here at the store.
Apparently they've already teased the release of this for Blu-ray or whatever, and said that they're going to release an extended cut. Because Trevorrow had a few things that ended up on the cutting room floor, especially the opening with all of, like, the prehistoric dinosaurs and
that
stuff.
That was, like, my favorite stuff. Yeah. Some of my favorite
so
stuff.
So he's going to release a cut that incorporates that and a few other things.
Definitely would watch that.
Yeah, I would too.
While you guys were watching dinosaur movies, I was studying The Blade. No, I was actually watching TV. I actually caught up on a bunch of stuff. I fell a little behind. There's been a bunch of stuff. So I caught up on a couple things on Peacock, the less talked about streaming network that I think actually has a stronger strike rate than...
What is that, NBC?
It's NBCs. I actually think they're better than Netflix and probably Prime, as far as, like, the amount of good stuff that's on there.
I think maybe.
Because here's the thing. They've got Killing It, which is Craig Robinson's snake-killing comedy, which is hilarious. They have the second season of Girls 5 Eva and Rutherford Falls, which I both watched. So Girls 5 Eva is basically, it was a girl group in the 90s.
Yeah.
And now it is the modern day, and they have gotten older, and they're trying to, like, have another... They're trying to basically
have
go back and recapture their fame. And they're all older... Sarah Bareilles, who is a, like, Broadway actress, I think, and singer.
Yeah, that's right.
She is the lead. She's, like, a mom.
Tina Fey's show,
it's
right?
Tina Fey is one of the creators of it. Her husband does all the music, and the music's great. It's super funny.
I've seen, like, half of the first season.
It gets better and better as it goes along. Busy Phillips plays the sort of the... She was the Christian nice girl who married a clearly gay boy band member.
Yeah.
And they're sort of falling apart. She's a little bit dumb, but very sweet. Paula Pell, I think is her name, plays like the lesbian member of the group who came out, looks more old than the rest of them, has definitely changed a lot more. She's hilarious. She was great in AP Bio, which is another show on Peacock. And Renee Elise Goldsberry from Hamilton plays the sort of self-entitled Wiki, who is the famous one, the one who basically is hot on Instagram and all this kind of stuff, and is an egomaniac. These girls all come together to basically try and make a new album. The second season is they're making their new album. They're trying to pitch to the label. They make a video with a rapper who gets canceled halfway through the video. They're wondering why everyone is calling to cancel on this video while they're still making it, and they find out that he's done some terrible things. It's very funny. It's got that sort of pop cultural weirdness that 30 Rock and Kimmy Schmidt had.
Half-hour show.
A half-hour show. Very funny. Rutherford Falls is a show that Mike Schur of Brooklyn Nine-Nine and The Good Place fame is one of the producers. But it's also got an indigenous creator, and it is about a town. Ed Helms plays the lead of the town. He's the head of this cultural museum. He is, like, the whitest of white guys. And throughout the first season, he found out basically that he was not a member of this this white family that was, like, that was the sort of the founders of this town. And it sort of sent him spinning. But the story is about his best friend, who is the Native American woman who runs the cultural center with him. And also this sort of shark guy named Terry, who runs the Minnetonka Casino. And as season two opens... He has basically transformed the town into ye old Rutherford Falls, where everything is like a riff on Colonial Williamsburg.
Uh-huh.
And In the first season, in the first episode back, there's a new woman, named Feather Day, played by someone from Letterkenny. And she is basically, she winds up wanting to run for mayor as the mayor has stepped down. And so Terry, being the power broker that he is, finds someone to run for mayor. And it is 18-year-old Bobby, who is a non-binary sort of like assistant to Ed Helms' character.
Uh-huh.
And who is like a more optimistic version of April Ludgate from Parks and Rec.
Okay.
She's delightful. So they've got all these great characters, and they're basically doing the story of this sort of small town. It feels very Parks and Rec, but with a focus on indigenous issues that you don't usually see.
Okay.
It's really, really funny. There's a Dirty Dancing riff in the first episode that's really good. There's Ed Helms is going through his own transformation where he's learning to be anti-racist in his own pompous way. And in the first season, this was all a podcast. There was a podcast from out of town. It was like the love interest of one of the lead characters. And that podcast has gone live now. And we see a little bits and pieces of that that has kind of destroyed Ed Helms' life.
Okay.
It's really funny and clever. It's got a lot of stuff that I don't think you've seen anywhere else.
Mike
Schur. The second season is like, the first season it took him a little while to get into what made it work, and I fell in love with it by the end. The second season is just like, hits the ground running and is really, really good.
I need to watch this.
It's really, really good. Over on HBO Max, I caught up on season 2, I think, of Hacks, which is, what's her name, Jean Smart?
Yep, Jean Smart.
Jean Smart playing a sort of Joan Rivers-esque comedian who had retired to Vegas, and then this young writer basically gets assigned to her. And they have sort of a mom surrogate daughter relationship, but at the end of season one, the young writer had gotten sort of mad at her, and basically wrote this scathing letter about all the terrible egomaniac stuff she did, and then got hired back with her, and then in the second season she finds out about it, and so it is a bit of like she's having to own up to having said all these terrible things about this woman that are kind of true. And the woman, meanwhile, has, like, gone off her Vegas residency and is back on the road trying to recapture her comedic roots and be more autobiographical and sort of give something real and also, you know, sort of acknowledge the generational struggle that she's not always relevant to things anymore.
Hmm.
It's really funny. It's very sweet. It's got a really, really solid finale. They've already renewed it for season 3.
Is Jean Smart the chick from Designing Women a Million Years Ago?
Yes.
Yeah, Watchmen.
She's also one of the notable love interests of Frasier. I think she was maybe the one he wound up with.
She's pretty great in everything she
She's
said.
Fantastic, and she's really good in this. And then Barry, season 3. Barry is, what's the guy's name? It's from Saturday Night Live. Bill Hader.
Bill Hader's.
Playing a sort of messed up hitman.
Doesn't he write and produce this show?
He does.
He
directed several episodes.
Yeah.
It started out as sort of a dark comedy. He basically, the premise was this guy who was a hitman finds Henry Winkler runs an acting studio, and he's like this megalomaniacal Hollywood washed up guy.
Decides he wants to give up being a hitman to be an actor.
Correct.
I watched the first season.
And as this went on, Barry continued to do more and more like hitman stuff.
Yeah.
And he is now like in a very dark place.
Yeah, I just keep seeing responses from some of my friends after watching like every episode, and like, holy shit!
It's super compelling, super dark and interesting. I would compare it to, say, Better Call Saul more than anything else.
I feel like Bill Hader is a little... he's great. Yeah. I mean, literally, he is super smart and he's just an interesting person to listen to. I've listened to a couple podcasts with him, and I want to check back into this. It's just
How do
TV
they handle
releasing.
The fact that, does he kill bad people?
Oh, no, no.
Oh, no.
No, he kills a character who we all really liked.
It goes into sort of Breaking Bad territory. And,
okay, that's what I was wondering about.
Yeah, he is like, basically falling apart psychologically. And they definitely... The way they make him sympathetic, I think, is basically that he went in the army and got messed up.
Yeah.
And they're sort of like, he's not fully responsible for this, but he's done enough that you're like, oh, okay, I sympathize with him, but he is maybe a bad man.
Yeah.
It's really, really well done. And actually, all the characters are like that, because his girlfriend had a traumatic relationship, but she's turned into kind of an abuser herself. And Gene Cusimano, who is a Harry Winkler character, is very much a narcissist. It's really interesting sort of nuanced character work. And Stephen Root, by the way, who's his, like, his handler, gets a really great little character arc here. It's like, it's some of the best writing and acting on TV. Super, super good.
If I were to watch a Hitman show, it would be that one.
Yeah.
And yet.
Yep. You're not gonna, because it's about a Hitman. Not gonna, about I know. Nick, you were talking about Iron Chef.
Yeah. Talk about, I watched so much of this growing up. I mean, literally, it was one of those stupid things late at night that they had on reruns on Food Network that I would watch the old Japanese version with the subtitles. Uh-huh. Then I watched a little bit of the Iron Chef America, which they brought in people like Bobby Flay, and of course they had Masahiro Morimoto as their Iron Chef, as sort of the callback to the original. This one is actually at Netflix, and involves Alton Brown as the basically the commentator, along with Kirsten Kish. If you've watched any of Top Chef, you know who that is.
Yep.
And it's dealing with a couple of Iron Chefs that the chairman, which is the grandson of the original chairman, is doing. There's 8 episodes of this. It's just, I'm a food guy. I like all these chefs.
Sure.
And I like that chefs nowadays are not kind of the egocentric assholes that they used to be. You're starting to see, like, people who just want to celebrate food as opposed to... And I think we've seen that progression in Top Chef.
I think
you're
right.
Where it's less about infighting and more about actually, like, working, not as a unit, but there's some care thrown in and some respect as opposed to being just egomaniacs.
Yep.
And I want to visit some of these challengers restaurants now. There's a place in Louisiana that this guy, like, does... He did some amazing food. I mean, I think he ultimately did win, but he made, like street tacos that were, so, like, the Frito bag taco thing.
Yeah, okay.
Like, an upscale version of that.
Yeah.
But he, like, also served food on, like, dinosaur taco trays, and it's just, like, it's very playful.
Huh.
But I love this. I love Alton Brown. His breadth of knowledge about food is insane. And they've got good judges. It's just a lot of fun. It takes me back to when I watched the original, but it's also just nice to have that. It's comfort food eating.
How much is there?
There's 8 episodes.
Oh, okay. So not like a ton.
No. It's just a full season, and there is an arc, and there will be more, and the chairman is so over the top and hilarious, as he should be. But yeah, I had a blast with it.
And then you were also going to mention The Lincoln Lawyer.
Yes, which is was a movie adapted from a Michael Connelly book.
Yep. Movie had starred Matthew McConaughey.
It starred Matthew McConaughey. I forget who directed it. This show, which loosely adapts the book, is actually written for the television by David E. Kelly. So Ally McBeal and a bunch of other things you've...
Well, recently we've... Big Sky was...
Big David Sky. Kelly's. And focuses on a lawyer who is dealing with an oxycodone addiction.
His own.
And kind of ruined his reputation as a lawyer. Another lawyer who was his friend is killed and basically bequeaths his law practice to him. And so he sort of gets the second chance at redemption in certain ways. It's a little formulaic, but I also think it's good at what it does.
Okay.
I don't recognize a lot of the the actors.
If I'm not mistaken, David E. Kelly's been doing stuff since, like, L.A. Law, Ally McBeal, Picket Fences, just, like, a zillion shows.
I will say...
He does a lot of legal dramas. He did, like, what, Boston Legal, too?
Yep. the big things, Neve Campbell's in this, so she plays one of the main character's ex-wives.
Okay.
And then the main character's investigator is the big guy from the, the horror series, not that James Wan did, not Conjuring, but...
Sinister?
No.
The main one with the red face demon.
Yes.
Insidious.
Yeah, one of the two goofy guys.
Oh, the big Ghostbuster people?
Not the guy who actually became the director, but the goofy other, tall guy.
Yep.
He's the investigator, and he is great.
Okay.
So, yeah, This is not amazing television, but it's surprisingly good for what it is.
Yeah. That's kind of, I think, where David Kelly has landed these days.
He's
I think
got some
his heyday was
though.
Probably
yeah.
the 90s.
Because didn't he do Big Little Lies also for HBO with like
right.
Nicole Kidman?
Or he was definitely involved.
Yeah, okay. I think he definitely kind of goes back and forth to passion projects, whichever, whatever he wants.
That guy's prolific.
He is very prolific. He is like the Cullen Bunn of the TV world.
I think he actually has a... higher strike rate, or like a better rate than
oh, I think know. So. But
his
I'm
highs
just,
are higher.
I'm just saying say. The output is about the same.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. That's a fair comparison. Yeah.
All right, we are running out of time, so I think that's going to be it for the week. We will be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.